Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Sawbones Mauley, and my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
So it's been a while, bud.
It has.
But this particular episode is, we were talking offline with our guest and we weren't even technically recording yet. I'm like, oh, we gotta stop this because we were getting like gold, and hopefully we can maybe do some of the outtakes. Jay can put that in there, but super excited about our guest.
Yeah.
You know, you were kind of creeping around to see her past, where she's from.
Yeah. Primetime country. Can't wait to talk about that a little bit. Your alma mater.
Yeah.
Doing some things in football.
I cannot wait to hear more because just the story so far, this is going to be a really good episode.
Yeah. So, quite honestly, the queen of orthobiologics and some of the research that I did do. And I will tell you, one of the things that I research, and I'm a little shameful, but I'm like, I don't want to mispronounce your name. So I'm like, Dr. Ariana Demers.
Demers?
Demers.
Demers. Demers.
Yep. Boom. See, you got the first name, I got the second name.
Man, and I'm
we're
like,
good teammate.
Because it could be R, it could be Air. I'm like, Air Jordan. I'm like, that's how I'm going to remember it. That sounds horrible. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So as we kind of start, you know, most of these conversations is just give us sort of like a 30,000 foot view of where you're from, you know, how orthopedics always, you know, for us at least, everyone kind of has a backstory of like how you got there.
Well, it's always a guy, right? You got to be a dude, number one, right? Got to be like tall, ex-jock, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking she played some type of sports, athletics, but not a dude.
Tennis? Soccer?
Golf.
Nope. All right. So I'll just give you the answer so you don't have to keep guessing, right? So I grew up in Golden, Colorado, born and raised in Golden, Colorado, and I was active. I did lots of sports, and at the ripe age of 10, I broke my arm in gymnastics. And had the pleasure of meeting my first orthopedic surgeon. And he was a kind of a cool dude. And he said, hey, you know, we could take you to the, you know, it needs to be reduced. And we could take you to the emergency room and, you know, put an IV in and do all these things. Or, you know, we could just do it right here and like be done with it. I'm like, cool, we'll just be done with it. And my mom lost it. She's like, what? Like, no, nothing? I'm like, it's going to be fine, mom. I was 10, right? And so I made that decision and we just went for it. And I was like, all right. I was like, oh, I'm feeling a little woozy. But we got the arm reduced. I had a big old cast. It was, yes, plaster at that time, not even fiberglass. So that was great. And that started my super big interest in orthopedics. I was always kind of mechanically inclined, and you know, building things, you name it, I did it. And I kind of went through high school, and I was in sports. I was swimming, and you know, doing other things. Went to college at University of San Diego. And I was swimming for them, the Division I team there. And then I said, well, shoot, I'm going to go to med school. So I kind of need to do some like other stuff. And I transferred back to home to CU Boulder. And so that's where I graduated from. And then I went to medical school in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the osteopathic school there. That was definitely a culture shock. I was not ready for Tulsa, Oklahoma, but there I found myself in the thick of it. And then I went to residency at Michigan State, and that was phenomenal. And I loved my residency, and it was such a great time. And then I finished my, I just did my fellowship in sports medicine at Taos in Taos, New Mexico. And then I have been here in Northern California in Sonora ever since. And I was just telling these guys that they're like, well, where's Sonora? I said, well, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's about, you know, 2.5 hours east of San Francisco, 2 hours south of South Lake Tahoe, kind of near Yosemite. And people kind of go, wow, that kind of is in the middle of nowhere. It is. It's a it's a town of 20,000.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
It's like me.
Yeah, right? we're the county seat. And it is definitely Friday Night Lights, for those of you who have seen that. And so I started out. I was recruited by a senior orthopedic surgeon. I joined him. I was thinking that maybe he was retiring, and he said he absolutely was not until 4 months into me moving my whole life across country. And he said, well, I'm retiring. I'm not going to work here anymore. I'm not retiring. I'm just not going to work here. And I expect you to buy my practice. And so that was not exactly what I was expecting. And so here I was 4 months into it, operating and super busy, and now expected to buy a practice of some dude I didn't really know.
What was the valuation, so if you don't mind me asking? Like,
it what? Had
to be, what was the valuation? Like, what was he asking? Like, was it $5 million to buy the practice? I'm just curious, just sticker shock.
Oh, no, it's even worse than this. Okay. So he didn't have it valuated. Okay. There was no, like, money discuss. He had no idea. And so I was like, listen, and his practice was named after him. So he wanted me to buy a practice that was his last name. Right. I'm like, well, that's not me. I'm not that doctor. So I can't buy that practice. And then I offered to and then I got pissed off. I was like, cause he kind of got nasty. He was like, well, you have to do this. I was like, well, I don't have to do anything. So I was like, I'm going to just open my own practice and I'm going to sort it out. And yeah, I'm pissed off, so I'm not going to, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to do the opposite.
Like a restrictive covenant or anything like that? That you had to, you know, follow for a year or anything? Nothing?
No, like those didn't really exist back then. Wow. It's been a bit. Yeah, so
He probably just thought you were just going to buy it. Because he probably just thought you were just going to buy it, right? I mean, you're you know, totally. Brand new hire. It's like, oh shit, what else am I going to do? I have no other choice but to go to the bank, get this loan and figure this out. When, I mean, kudos to you. Cause I mean, that's like, oh shit. Well, I'm basically starting over anyways, no matter what I do. It's his name on the building. No one knows who I am. I've been doing this for 4 months. Like, what is the difference? Save the money and do it on my own.
Well, you did have to purchase one thing, that little yellow book that you were telling us about. You mind sharing that part?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did purchase a couple things. I actually bought a building also. Yeah. So I bought the building that I put my practice in. And then I bought a little yellow book called Medical Practice for Dummies. Actually, that, you know, this For Dummies series. Because I had no earthly idea on how to run a business. And I learned a couple of things and then kind of just went for it. Hired a partner. His interview was on the ski slopes, so that was good. I lured him right in. I said, well, see, it's only 40 minutes from our house. You can just ski all the time. It's going to be great.
Was he an actual business partner, or was he employed by the practice?
I employed him.
Okay.
Yes. So I employed everyone that joined me. So I had him as a employee, and then the next year I added another sports medicine surgeon. And then I had three PAs I had a whole crew.
What did the original partner, what did he do? Was he just sports med?
So he's a hand surgeon.
Okay. Oh, okay. Extremity guy. Okay.
Yeah, so he was a hand surgeon, and then there was another guy, and he was coming to town no matter what, because his wife's dad was an OBGYN there. She grew up there. They were coming back there, and I was like, well, you know, I'm either going to have competition, because he's a sports med surgeon, or he's going to be in my practice. So I was like, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So I offered him a job as well. We went skiing again. Jeez. And that seemed to work well.
How far from when you open, like what year did you open your practice?
Is this 2010.
2010. Okay. And then mm-hmm. what year did you hire all these people? Was it all within the first couple of years?
Well, the hand surgeon was 2010.
Wow.
So I got notified that I was expected to buy the business in 4 months, like 2009. And I was like, well, this isn't going to work. And so I just started going and I was like, well, I can't really do this by myself, like just hang a shingle. I don't know. So I was like, well, I need somebody. Like, and he was, I think he had interviewed before or he wanted to be there or something. And I was like, well, we'll just wing it and we'll open the doors together. I mean, I'll pay him. He's my employee, but we open it as a partnership.
Yeah.
In how it worked, but I was obviously in charge of all the things.
How did you even know?
Yeah, so then 2010.
I'm just curious.
And then 2011.
Like, you're brand new. He's brand new. Like, the balls that you had to, like, offer these contracts to people. Like, I started my practice, but I was 8 years into my career at that point. Knew a little bit to be dangerous, but I didn't know any business stuff. So, like, that just, like, seems very daunting to me.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. I don't know. I just kind of I was just winging it.
the fear of the unknown.
Yeah, and so I contracted with the hospital, and they had some income guarantees, but that we contracted for all the services, right? Okay. And so whatever we billed out, they like started the contract, but then it was under me, and then.
So you had some financial support for him coming in. It wasn't like you were taking loans out to pay his salary. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. But it's such an underserved area that, like, so we were on guarantee. I was on guarantee from the hospital when I started with my other guy for 3 months, before I was busy enough to come off of guarantee and eat what I kill.
Okay.
Right. And he ended up being on guarantee like 4 months, you know, and then he was busy enough.
Those are good problems to have.
Yeah. And then the next guy, same thing. He was on contract guarantee. He was a little bit different, but it was same thing. Maybe 4 to 6 months. I think he drew it out a little bit longer, but so I did have some financial backing from the hospital, but really it was like I was still in charge of all the billing, sure. Like they weren't helping me with any of that.
Did you do all in-house billing?
So we did, a lot of in-house billing, and then we had a billing company for a while, and then we signed on with Athena Health. I don't know if you're familiar with that EMR company that did a lot of, like clearinghouse, claims cleaning beforehand.
Okay.
It was a great EMR. It still is, but they also did some of that billing. So it was fascinating. But then fast forward, I ended up selling my practice to the hospital and became an employed physician.
What year was that?
What's a timeline?
2013.
Okay.
2013. Wow. And then I had my daughter in 2015 and I was still like cranking, you know, the volume never slowed down from day one. And I just was like, holy crap, this is miserable. This is awful. Not only do I still have to work just as hard, now I don't even get to make any decisions because I'm employed by the hospital and I can't like affect change. So it was like a super frustrating experience to be an employed physician. I was like, I'm going to lose my mind. Like this is not working well.
What was the impetus that kind of like drove you to sell your practice to the hospital? Because I was in a very similar situation. 2011 came out, was an employed physician, but in a private practice in Michigan. Did that for a year, stayed in the same practice, but became employed by the hospital because they flashed big numbers and made it sound great. And then I knew right away this was not for me. And I went 2 years later, went back into the same private practice, became a partner. So what was it for you that were you just done with dealing with the business of it, or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had like 20 employees and I still didn't know what the hell I was doing. and so I was like, what is going on? I have like two full-time jobs. I'm a full-time orthopedic surgeon and I'm a full-time CEO. And I just, it was just too much. And so I was like, I don't know, like, I got to be done with this. And there was some other like impetus to that. But ultimately, yeah, it looked good at the time, right? I did make more money, as an employed physician than a private practice physician, but, I was miserable. I was absolutely freaking miserable. And it was just, I do not do well when people tell me what to do. Obviously, like they told me to buy the business and I was like, no, I'm going to do my own thing. And so I kind of was miserable for a while doing that. And in, I think, 2017, I had it and I walked out.
So you did it for 4 years.
I was employed for 4 years. Oh,
you doubled my tenure. Like,
do what?
You doubled my tenure. I did it for 2 years. I had a 2-year contract and then they tried to increase my salary year three. And I'm like, nope. And I took a massive pay cut to go back into private practice because I was equally as miserable as you were. It was just, could not stand it going into these meetings with pencil pushers sitting behind a desk telling me that I was losing the hospital money. I'm like, I'm not losing this hospital money. Like, no. I just walk out of second grade here. Right? I know I don't have the most business experience in the world, but I know what generates money for this hospital. So you, right. 2016, right. 17, right. You walked away?
Right. Yeah. So I walked away. I actually walked out at lunch.
Oh my.
With no intentions of coming back. I was like, mic drop. I'm out. Peace out. They're like, but you have patients in the afternoon. I'm like, well, you're going to have to call them and tell them I'm not there. Not seeing them. Sort it out. Yeah. I don't care.
Hey, Mr. or Mrs. Administrator, maybe you can go see them.
I didn't tell anybody. So here's the deal is my office was really great because they were all the people I hired as my private practice and they just transitioned over. So they actually all had my back and just happened to work for the hospital. Right. And so I legitimately just walked out. I was like, I'm done. I was willing to walk away.
Like what that straw was that broke the camel's back. What was the breaking
point? I don't
think
it was any straw. Like I was so miserable. I just was like, what the heck am I doing? I don't even like, I don't remember anybody's name. I don't think I'm helping anybody. I'm done. I'm out.
I think
peace out. So there was nothing that like actually broke the camel's back. Right. I just so much. It was like what anvil fell that day. I think honestly what had happened is I had a nurse that was really, really great at wearing a lot of hats and keeping me on time and, you know, allowing the crank to happen. And she was on maternity leave. And so the fill-in nurse did a great job, but she wasn't my primary nurse. Yeah. And so it just wasn't as smooth. And it was like disaster after disaster and like fire after fire. And it was like, okay, I'm out. I'm done. So I quit. I walked out. And then weirdly enough, that day I run into my nurse at Togo's, right? I'm getting a salad. I actually called the chief of staff and I was like, I need a sabbatical. And they're like, no, you can't have one. I'm like, what? Well, I'm not working, so I got to do something. They're like, no, check your contract. You actually have to have a medical diagnosis to take time off. And I was like, okay, well, something's got to give. This is not okay. I don't know what to do. And then my office staff called me back and they're like, hey, you know, let's talk about this. They're like terrified. They're not going to have a job. And so they came up with a pretty great plan on what to do. So I went back to work and I cut my hours in half. So I only did, I used to do 2 days of surgery and then 2.5 days of clinic. So we cut our surgery days to 1 day and we cut our clinic days. They said, well, why don't you just do 2 half days in the morning and finish out the surgeries you have and call it good and just do that. So 2 half days and 1 day of surgery. I was like, that sounds pretty good. I could do that for a little bit. And we closed the practice to new patients. So no one could call, no one could like book anything. And I just did that for a while.
Were the other two physicians still there?
Yeah.
So the hand, yeah, upper extremity and the sports?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So those guys were still there. The PIs were still there. I had just hired another nurse practitioner. And so she did a lot of my scribing. So she was my scribe, my full-time scribe. And then I would just see patients in the morning and she would see patients other times that I was supervising or whatever. And I did 1 day of surgery and I still did my call. I was still doing, you know, trauma call at the time. And I was like terrified that I was going to go broke. I was like, I just cut my schedule in half. I'm going to go broke. And weirdly enough, my revenue dropped by about a third, which means there was definitely some, you know, inefficiencies there. And the most odd thing is no one from administration came and like checked on me.
No like staff physicians or anybody?
No one. No, wow. Nothing happened. I was like, well,
did they
sweet.
Just act okay. like everything was just fine? And
I don't even know if they knew. It's unclear what happened, but like I dropped my revenue by a third.
They knew.
What's that?
The bean counters definitely knew.
No one called. No one checked for 9 months.
Oh my.
My practice was closed to new patients and I was working 2 half days in the morning and just doing 1 day of surgery, just doing call for 9 months and nobody called. Nobody said anything. I was like, huh, well, this is cool. Great. I'm working 40 hours a week. This is awesome. But I was panicked also. I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And that's where orthobiologics came in, right? So and people always ask me like, how did you know? I'm like, I don't know. I was just running one day and I was like, you know what? Orthobiologics is going to be the future of this of orthopedics. And this is what I'm going to do. And then I was like, how do I get really smart? And then I started looking, I'm like, well, shoot, I don't know how to get smart at all. I can't even figure out how to get smart about this stuff. And so I just looked and looked and looked and took a bunch of classes and, you know, did a bunch of courses from Interventional Orthobiologics Foundation. And then I contracted with Regenex and I opened up a little regenerative practice. I tried to partner with the hospital so they could have like a little carve out where there'd be a little regenerative practice within my existing practice. And they were like, it'll be 80-20. And I'm like, 80-20, like 80 me, 20 you? They're like, no. It's cash pay. So 80% us and then 20% you. I was like, for cash pay.
That's not how cash pay works. They don't come to the hospital for the hospital to do these regenerative medicine. They go to the physician. So
I was like, okay, that's fine. And then the straw that broke the camel's back, I was on a phone call. I don't think, I guarantee they didn't know I was on the phone call. I was just listening in. And one of the administrators was like, well, from what I understand, it's not that hard to do. You know, under ultrasound buttons, you just put a needle in there and, you know, you just do the injection. It's not that hard. I was like, yeah, okay, buddy, not that hard. Peace out. And so I actually opened another practice 1 day a week, regenerative practice, cash practice. And I was like, well, we'll give this a whirl. Because I was only working 40 hours a week, right, at my normal job. So I was like, I got a whole nother day. I'm going to just do 1 day a week of regenerative practice and see how this goes. And I had no experience taking cash. I had no idea. I rented one room and didn't even have a lobby. So I hired a high school girl who was my receptionist, and she would meet the patient in like the common area and sit down and like post up with a computer and do their intake and then walk them back to the one room. And I would have the visit and I would do the thing and I'd take their credit card and put it in my little square reader and they would pay me money and I would do their procedure. And that's how I started. It was the craziest thing.
What year was this?
But after a this was 2017, 2018.
Okay.
And so I did that for a year. So I did a one day a week regenerative practice for an entire year. And then I bought another building.
But you were still doing your 2 half days of clinic, 1 day of surgery, and still taking call.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And the hospital was still cool with that arrangement?
Apparently.
Were they still paying you the same amount?
Well, it was eat what you kill.
Okay. Like
it was
so you had RVUs and everything.
Well, I mean, it was RVUs.
Yeah.
It was RVUs, but it was eat what you kill. It was like, I don't know. I was still doing just fine.
Sure.
Still making money for the hospital. And yeah, it was good. So then I did that for a while. I was like, holy crap, I think this is viable. I think I'm going to do this full time. And so I bought a building. I have a business partner who was a cash pay physical therapist. And we went in together and opened up our business that we have now. And I quit in 2019. Wow, and so we opened our doors in 2019.
What is your practice
right
called
before
now?
This thing called the, so my practice is called Restore Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. And we're in a larger building that also houses her practice. It's a peak performance care, physical therapy. And it's all cash. And so we just opened our doors in 2019, right before this thing called, COVID. So that was entertaining, to kind of weather that storm. It was definitely restrictive in California. And, so that was really great as a new baby business to then, kind of weather that storm. But, it's been fantastic. And, you know, looking back, it's people ask me like, oh, would you ever go back to the hospital? And I'm like, no way. Like, what? And everyone's like, oh, you have a number. Like, I'm like, yeah, but my number's really, really big. Like, it would have to be enormous to go back to the hospital, right?
So do you still do surgery at all, or is it all regenerative? You do. Okay. And where do you do the cases
at? Yeah. So I still work at the hospital.
Oh, okay.
I just stopped taking call. Now it's been 2 years. So I stopped taking call 2 years ago. So I was still taking stupid call. I shouldn't have been, but I was. I think
was it a
I
was requirement? Worried about,
no.
Okay.
I was just worried about what my colleagues would think or say about me.
Sure.
That I wasn't like pulling my weight or I don't know, something. I definitely would. I should have done it sooner. I should have stopped taking calls sooner. But yeah, I still do surgery. I do sports medicine. I do a lot of arthroplasty. Always have. And ultimately, I think my cash based part of my business has just grown exponentially. And we are. It's so fun. It's so fun to not be hemmed in, right? Where you're like, oh, I think this is the best thing for you as a patient. Great. Okay. Well, let's just do that. Ready, go. No hoops, no nothing.
So can you give me like a day in the life of Dr. Ariana Demers? Like you are doing how many days of clinic, how many days of like regenerative medicine procedures, and how many days of surgery?
So right now I'm doing about 2 days a month of surgery. So not a whole lot. I do about 2 days a week of regenerative treatments, and then 2 days a week of consultations and clinic. And then obviously I have some administrative time, and I am traveling quite a bit, teaching and lecturing and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, no, I follow you on LinkedIn. I mean, it's amazing stuff that you've done. And like, I'm so interested in the regenerative medicine piece. I'm an arthroplasty surgeon, so I high volume hips and knees. It has its wear and tear. And I'm kind of with you, but a decade behind you with thinking about like the regenerative piece being like such a critical piece to kind of the future of orthopedics. And I mean, it fits in really well with our practice model. So just really briefly, because this isn't about me, this is about you and your journey and your story. But 2017, I had had it. I moved from Michigan. I was in practice in Michigan for 4.5 years, right out of fellowship. 2015, my wife and I made a decision to move back to where I'm from, which is Northwest Pennsylvania. And I was an employed physician there at a private practice because I knew I wasn't doing the hospital employed thing again. And I did that for two years. I had a 2-year contract. Knew very early on that like my vision versus the partners of the practice's vision were not even remotely aligned. They were all, and there's nothing against the community hospital, but I said, guys, we need to have ancillary resources, right? We need to get an ASC up and running. No. We'll piss the hospital off. I'm like, yeah, well, do you like taking, you know, Medicare cuts followed by commercial insurance pay cuts every single year for the past 15 years at that time? And Well, no, but we're committed to that. I'm like, yeah, you are, but like you're going to be stranded and out of a job here soon, or you're going to become hospital employed. And that's exactly what happened. So 2017, I said, I'm done. After my contract's done, I'm not renewing it. You guys haven't talked about partnership. And this practice was a private practice, a powerhouse for 40 years, 50 years in the community. It was literally the hospital I was born in. And I said, I'm going to go out, start my own practice. And January 1st, 2018, I did what you did. I knew nothing about it, started my own practice. Had a little heads up in terms of the pandemic. I didn't have to weather that storm right out of the gates. But we were super busy with just joints. And the guy that I had replaced in 2015 came out of retirement. He was an osteopathic arthroplasty surgeon, did the same fellowship as me. And we've been together ever since. I own the business similar to you. I have 4 orthopedic surgeons that I employ, and then I have 5 mid-level providers that I employ, and I think 30-some employees. But it's a lot, right? Being a CEO, running a practice. I have great people like Travis, Sean McKinnon, who was on earlier, my business manager, and just my leadership team, and the providers are all great. But in order to do this, and this is why I'm going into this, is like the whole point of this podcast is supporting private practice, because that pendulum has swung so far to the employed model, because I think people see that it's easy. I can get an easy paycheck. I don't have to worry about the business stuff, but you're sacrificing your autonomy. You're sacrificing your independence. You're essentially putting a muzzle on yourself. You can't have a voice in any decision-making. And we went to school way too long to be told what to do by people that really have no business taking care of like healthcare decisions. And so, but this regenerative piece has been really in my head for the past several years. And I've followed you. I mean, other big names that you associate with, like Don Buford, Scott Sigmund, like you guys are doing great, great stuff. And obviously offline, I'm going to have to pick your brain a lot more about like, where would I even start to learn about this kind of stuff? Cause I'm not giving up my day job. I love what I do, but I would love to start to offer regenerative medicine to our patients. Cause there's really not a lot of that going on in this area.
I think too, especially like where we're at, there's a huge disconnect between, obviously, like we've talked about like injections and things like that, but like just different things that, you know, maybe it's not necessarily that people aren't good candidates, but maybe they're just not ready, like mentally or in, you know, the time in their life. And there's like, there are other options out there, but I feel like the world of healthcare has been so insurance reimbursement driven, covered, not covered, in network, out of network. And so now this whole concept of like transparency in medicine with private practice of like, you know what, you know, the insurance companies, okay, like here's what this really costs. Here's like fair market value for the services. And also with private practice, I mean, from my experience is like, there's so much extra value built into that because your time in terms of reimbursement and like what you're getting for like a cash pay service, like there's a lot more value in the, from the provider standpoint, right? Than taking these bull crap, like, okay.
Both.
Here, yeah.
Actually both. It's a win-win, it's a right? Win-win. When you cut out insurance companies,
yes.
Then number one, you get to provide so much care and time and attention to the patient.
Yep.
And you get to do a better job instead of just seeing the patient for 7 minutes is what all you can honestly afford in an insurance-driven care world.
Exactly.
And then, so not only do you do a better job for your patient, the patient feels so valued, so taken care of, and they actually get better care.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, you get, you're not having somebody steal from the middle, right? Mm-hmm. So you're having a direct transfer of money for services from the patient to the doctor, without those middlemen like stealing all the biz in the middle. And so ultimately it's about a 17-to-1 ratio from a cost perspective. So I have to see 17 Medicare patients to equal the same amount of revenue as a single.
Are you serious? Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the way that that breaks down, and now again, with like this sort of pricing transparency, it's like, quite honestly, I feel like more people are more inclined to go outside of their network or insurance. And we have stuff going on here with like some of the local insurance companies that also own massive hospitals that they just dictate whatever they want. They can go through, like, for instance, a part of what I do, I own a DME company separately from the consulting world that I'm in. And it's like, we have a massive health system here who basically is like, you know, Medicare will do stuff with certain codes and they'll, you know, just like audit 10% of your claims. And so 10% of your claims will get denied. And then you have to submit additional documentation. So this insurance company, who is very big in our area,
you can say it, UPMC.
They are deny 100% of the claims. So, and then they have a 6-month review process for this request for additional documentation. And I'm like, I don't know if you guys know, but like small businesses, small private practices, like all of like
we don't have the bandwidth.
There's no way. I'm like, this is like. Mm-hmm. Almost borderline, like, I don't know the legality behind it and certainly don't want, but like, it just is so challenging. And now, I mean, I'm in a situation where we didn't even talk about this. My dad's having some back pain and he's had some injections that, you know, had some relief, but, you know, I think he needs something a little bit more, like a Dr. Co kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm talking to him today and he's just talking about all the documentation, have to fail physical therapy, you got to do this, you got to do that. I'm like, how much do these injections cost? And he tells me, I'm like, well, come Friday and I'll just pay for it. Like, it's so much easier, quite honestly. And all the hoops that you have to jump and you're cheaper. Out of pocket that you're going to spend anyways with the co-pays and the deductibles and all these other things. It's like, wait, we're going to spend less money. We're going to get expedited, you know, care. We're going to get to see the provider that we want when we want. We're going to have this experience. It's like, it really is. It's crazy. The more and more we talk about this.
I think I just came up with the title for this episode. 17 to 1. It's a number.
17 to 1.
That's I love the title it. Of
it's
this.
Shocking.
I can't believe
it. It is shocking. And it's just like, how can that be fair? Like, it's just, I can't keep the lights on. Honestly, my cash pay practice is floating my insurance-based care practice.
Yeah.
Like it is not sustainable. So
at what point do you turn that switch off? Like where are you at right now? I don't need like numbers, but like percentages. Are you 80% cash pay, 20% insurance, or
from a money standpoint, from a revenue standpoint, I am 75% cash, 25%
pretty good guess.
You're close.
Insurance.
Yeah,
you're getting there.
What about volume standpoint?
Totally different, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's about 60-40.
Okay.
No, it's even worse, right?
Closer to
so
50-50?
Like do the math. It's like a 15-to-1, 17-to-1 ratio. So you gotta do the math. So I am like actively trying to like cut out the Medicare patients who are never gonna be a regenerative candidate, right? Yeah. Not because we don't love them dearly, but we can't just continue doing, like, I don't even do cortisone, first of all. I refuse. And so all I do is HA. And in the next 4 months, I'm probably going to stop doing that because of the ridiculous reimbursement situation that exists. So then what am I going to offer them? Like nothing. Arthroplasty, which I'm, winding that down as well. It ends up being a really losing battle. And the only reason I actually hung on to Medicare is because I cut out when I opened my doors. I said, I'm not taking any commercial insurers because I don't want to do business with them. I don't appreciate the way that they do business. They are not in it for the patients and they're not in it for me. And so I'm going to vote with my dollars that I don't do business with those people.
Oh, wow. So the only insurance you take is Medicare?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But where I live is 65% Medicare. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's tricky. And I was like, well, how do I say no to a social program, right? How do I say no to these patients who have a fixed income? And so I still haven't really fully rectified that. Like I still can't reconcile that part of it. There's a ton of Medicare patients who have plenty of money and they're just Medicare age. And so they are Medicare beneficiaries. But you're right. The people kind of rail against me. They're like, I can't believe you don't even take insurance. I'm like, I can't believe that you're so blind that you think that insurance actually covers things. Do you know that people have a $10,000 deductible and they have to pay $10,000 before anything is covered? So if I come in under the 10 grand mark, I'm actually saving them money.
This is the really sad and part that makes me angry too, is somehow we get made to look like the bad guys because we're the ones that want to maybe stop. So I stopped taking Medicaid a couple years ago because we were losing money, right? I do a joint replacement, and I'm not saying that patient population doesn't deserve great care because they do, but it can't come at a cost. Like I'm running a business. This is not a charity. I can't just be doing this. And not only breaking even, I'm losing money when I do these cases, right?
Totally. And
there tend to be riskier patients with higher risk factors.
Comorbidities. And, yeah. Absolutely.
So, and that's not being stereotypical. It's just the facts. And so when reality. We start to talk about this, it's like you should, and I have a concierge subset of my practice. It's about 25%. And patients would be like, you should just take what the insurance gives you and be happy with it. I'm like, so you go anywhere in the world, right? You go to McDonald's, you go to Home Depot, they set their prices, right? They set their prices and they can collect. You don't get the burger until you pay for what you don't get your pipe fittings or your lawnmower at Lowe's or Home Depot until you pay it. It's not like a negotiation.
Right.
So
right.
Why am I getting better at what I do every year, but your great insurance is compensating me less when people are getting sicker, the risk goes up, and my skill level goes up, but you're going to compensate me less every year, and you're going to take more every year, and the hospitals are going to take more every year. Like, this is so absurd that I'm glad that, this is one of the big things with transparency, like this podcast, we started talking about this, and initially I was a little uncomfortable talking about it because, patients watch this, but I think this is exactly what we do need to be talking about so that patients can understand
it. I talk to my patients all the time about money.
Yeah.
I tell them exactly how much their insurance company is actually paying me to do their care. And they're like, $40?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, $40 for this. They're like, well, you can't even put my food on your table for that. I'm like, exactly. Oh, shit. That's why I can only spend 7 minutes with you. I'm so sorry. If they paid me more, I could do more time. They're like, well, can I pay?
And you're like, dang. And no. Sorry, but your 7 minutes is up.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's so absurd.
Yeah. So it is disturbing. And people always ask me, my patients always ask me when the regenerative medicine is going to be covered by insurance. I'm like, God, I hope it never. Otherwise you probably wouldn't qualify. And then they're like, well,
I think the other pieces too is, and we've talked about it on other, with other guests, but it's like, it's the insurance card entitlement piece. And it's like, I think the two biggest, pull the wool over your eyes are number one in medical school, how many business classes did you take? Right. So I think there's a reason for that. And secondly, How many like insurance education seminars do people take when they're choosing which plan they're going to sign up for? Same number.
Well, so only it's like, the one that's making money off of them.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, oh, well, if you're taking just like the general population, right? Now, like we're self-employed, so you are like pretty diligent, even though it's still expensive as you know what to like have healthcare. But it's like, okay.
Oh, I don't, by the way.
Do you just go without it?
Her and Daniel Paul, I need to do this. Can you talk to my wife and figure out how I can convince her? Because I'm all for getting rid of it.
But we have to offer it like for our employees, like from a business.
You don't have to.
I know, but
I don't really.
How does that work?
I don't believe in it.
No one pushes
back? I have to do my values. And so as a business owner, I do not believe in commercial insurance. Therefore, I don't have it for my family. I don't offer it for my employees. I just don't believe in it. I think it is an awful product that is detrimental to everybody. And it's predatory. And I don't believe in it. So I don't offer it for my employees. I offer them a stipend. We have a health share.
Yep.
Which has worked out great for us. And that's it.
You might be my new hero. Because seriously, it's like...
New tattoo.
Yeah.
Dr. Demers, you're going to get a new tattoo?
Right here. Right on my collarbone.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.